When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Newcastle Natter. My name is Fergus Craig and I am joined by Paul Doolan.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hi, Paul. And Dave Watson.
Hello.
Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How have you been, Dave?
I'm all right. I got stiffed by a car rental company. They're trying to charge me £400 for an existing scratch. So I'm in. I'm going to get my lawyers onto them. I'm going to get my fucking lawyers onto these bastards.
Are we your lawyers?
Yeah.
Yes.
Craig and Doolan Associates, LLP.
Nice.
I didn't see the game on Saturday because I was at another game. I was at, oh, Jesus. I'm going to cough quite a lot on this podcast. That's just the way it is. And I apologize to everyone for that. But you can either have a coughing Fergus Craig or you can't have a Fergus Craig. And no one wants not a Fergus Craig.
I think we should say, for context, Fergus is having a medical and they're just very unsure about his testes, which is why there's a lot of coughing.
Paul, yes, what am I saying? I didn't see the game because I was at another game. I was at the game of, who was it? Palace versus Southampton.
You should know.
Jesus.
It was all right. It was nice to be at football.
But you can give us the inside scoop on Southampton, seeing as you saw them last, because they're who we face next. Was that what you were doing? Were you on a scouting mission for Eddie Howe and the boys?
I was on a scouting mission, so I'll talk about that later. But I'm
based on your analysis so far, I do not think the scout report on the opposition would be great.
No.
Who was it?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think let's wait till we get there to the Southampton game and have your full, thorough scouting report on the opposition.
Letizia did nothing. I didn't even notice him.
I wish Letizia did nothing. That would be an upgrade.
I wish I hadn't watched that game and had instead watched Newcastle United's game, because that went terrifically well, didn't it, Paul?
It did. Unfortunately, I only got to see one half of the game because of Halloween commitments, which is something that happens when you're a dad.
And you're a ghost.
Yeah. A ghost. But even more annoyingly, the half I got to see was the first half, which kind of followed recent trends of like the Villa and Brentford games, where you thought, oh, we might be in trouble here. It was the Villa game, wasn't it? But you thought they look quite decent and this might be where we come unstuck. And then we end up winning 4-0. But it was quite a turgid first half with, I think, 10 to 15 minutes of stoppages after their keeper got concussion. And then we booed him for being concussed for the rest of the game. Until
To speak in the defence, I think it wasn't clear. So basically, the Aston Villa's game plan was to break up.
We've done it again, Dave. We've gone straight to the
No, so I just want to explain.
Can I just explain to the listeners, because there are people listening to this, why I broke out into hysterics then? Because last week, after another amazing victory, we very quickly got into a turgid conversation about time wasting and then had quite a lot of talk about how we shouldn't do that. And then almost immediately, it's like a magnetic force, we're drawn into the most turgid talking point of the game.
My mouth was open.
I was like, what should I go in on first? I was like, well, we could talk about Almiron scoring another world-class goal, but that would be almost too boring because he does it every week. Let's talk about Callum Wilson and him getting two goals in front of Gareth Southgate, and should he be playing in the World Cup? But no, we We could not help but be drawn into the subject of concussion.
I think this is because we're not used to being successful and it feels weird.
Yeah. So let's just skirt over that and just say that...
No, let's go deep. No other podcast is going deep on this issue.
No other podcast is time-wasting about time-wasting.
Yeah, it's true.
The first half, it was just, by design, it was very stop-start. Aston Villa knew that they couldn't compete with us at the energy we play at, so they just stop-start the game. And then as soon as we get the penalty, they have to come out and attack, which is why we destroyed them in the second half.
So, Callum Wilson.
Fucking good, isn't he?
Let's talk about Callum Wilson.
Yeah.
There were two international managers, as far as we know. Maybe there were more from... Maybe the manager from the Faroe Islands was in as well, just on a weekend away. But
I think taking over a national team might be worth considering for us to get tickets to Newcastle games. I might try and take over a small nation's football team just to get a seat.
So the England manager was in, as was the Brazil manager. Callum Wilson, I mean, if he's not injured, he has to go to the World Cup, right?
Definitely. Not just because he's scored 6 goals already this season. He's consistently a threat. He's big, he's strong, he's quick enough. He's like he's a poor man's Harry Kane, but he's really good.
A poor man's Harry Kane, is that the way it's...
Okay. I think what he's got, which is unusual, is he's not sort of streaky, he's not hot and cold, he's just hot and injured. They're like the two settings with him. You're either getting like over a goal every 2 games or some sort of hamstring problem.
I mean, he could definitely have had a hat trick against Villa on any other day.
In that respect, he's quite like Michael Owen.
Fuck off. No, he's not.
Well, the two things. Michael Owen was not a streaky striker. Michael Owen was a goal every 2 games striker when he played throughout his career.
Mm.
And Michael Owen was often injured. Just making that observation on the way Paul described Callum Wilson, which I don't think was an unfair sort of summary of him as a player. In that respect. He's quite like Michael Owen.
Morally, very different to Michael Owen.
Yeah,
don't have to split the world into good and baddies. We don't know what Callum Wilson is like at home behind the doors, behind the front door. What's going on in Callum Wilson's private life? He might be a terrible, terrible human being, far worse than Michael Owen.
Well, if I know Newcastle United, they will not put up with terrible human beings being involved behind the scenes. So I hope for his sake he's not.
But he is excellent as a football. Like, in terms of striker, I'd say he's the best striker we've had since Demba Ba. And Demba Ba was the best striker we've had since Alan Shearer. So that's the level that, you know, Callum Wilson's, when he's fit, I just have faith that we'll get a goal.
And I only sort of say this because Paul, just before the podcast, pointed out that as we record, it's literally 2 weeks today until the World Cup starts, which is like just mental to me. Like, I'm not mentally prepared for that. But he's got... is it a partnership? He's certainly got some kind of relationship with Kieran Trippier as well, who made his second goal for him. And you would think that Trippier has probably got a pretty good chance of starting for England. There's a question. Like, I'm just going in on the World Cup a lot now, because seeing as it's coming up, and actually we're in the amazing situation of having a few players in our squad who might play in it. Is Kieran Trippier England's first choice right back right now? Should he be England's first choice right back?
Yeah. I think he definitely is, and probably should be.
Because Reece James is injured, right?
Yeah.
and Trent Alexander-Arnold
can't defend.
Mercurial talent that he is not a defender.
Yeah, mercurial never means good, does it?
That's one thing. Before the Euros, a lot of people online hated Gareth Southgate, and two of the biggest problems that people have with him were that he didn't start Grealish. He's got to start. How can you not start Grealish? And that he didn't play Trent. But I mean, he's sort of, since then, he's kind of been proved right on both of them, isn't he? Yeah, no one's going to agree with me on that.
Don't care enough about England.
Yeah, I couldn't give a shit about England, sorry.
Okay, fine. Joe Linton got a goal, which is nice. Doesn't happen very often.
First goal of the season.
But, you know, I think it's just, he's not really a goal scorer, but it was nice for him to get one in that column. But can we talk about Almiron now, please? Because...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just looking at it, he scored in 5 of the last 6 games. The only game he didn't score in, no one else scored in either. That was the 0-0 against Man U. And he's scoring phenomenal goals.
Yeah.
It's an odd one to adjust to, because you've still got what he's been like the last sort of 3 seasons in your mind. But he's a player we were looking to replace in summer. If we had replaced him and a player had come in and played exactly the same as Almiron has, you'd be talking about it as one of the greatest signings in Premier League history.
I think it's going to be a case of us having to enjoy it while it's here, because this like level, even obviously he's not going to continue to score a goal a game, but this level of form, it can't continue. Do you know what I mean? Like, this sometimes happens with footballers. They just go through these streaks, like Papis Cisse when he was with us for a while.
I mean, that's a good example, because Papis Cisse consistently overperformed his expected goals. And currently, Miggy Almiron is overperforming his XG. I mean, his underlying XG per 90 has increased significantly. It's up to like 0.4 now, when it was about 0.2 per 90 last season. But he's Jesus Christ, the goals that he's scoring are very difficult chances to put away, really difficult chances to put away on the whole. But yeah, he's just
in. If you score amazing goals like that, then you will. That's where stats get a bit silly sometimes, isn't it? Because you will just perform. I'm sure Matt Letizia, who would have thought he would come up twice in this podcast? I'm sure throughout his career, he outperformed his expected XG, because nearly all of his goals were amazing.
And absolutely. But I would say that you look at someone like Erling Haaland's a good example. This is somebody who outperforms his XG consistently throughout his career. Miggy Almiron's not. Miggy Almiron consistently underperforms his expected goals. But it just so happens that this period, not only is he getting into better positions and getting better chances, he's also putting away harder chances. And it's his peak. And I still think we need a better player in there, but I don't think it's a priority now.
Will it ever get to the stage, do you think, where he's not palpably elated to have scored? Because he always looks so happy. Is it ever going to get to the stage where he's scoring with such regularity that he just does one of them like confident, no smile nods, just like, yeah, it's what I do?
I can't imagine it. If you imagine him scoring, all you can see is that sort of that grin that also looks like he's worried the police are raiding his house at the same time. It's never complete happiness. There's always an element of fear behind it.
He looks like he's found a way to cheat one of the grabbing machines at the fairground. okay, let's have a quick break, because, you know, why not? And then I'm sure there'll be much more to talk about in that game. I think Dave might have some statistical analysis for us. Ooh. And God knows we need it. And we'll also go and see what you've said to us on social media. Although we did send out the tweet about half an hour before it recorded, so probably not a lot. All right. See you in a minute. Bye. Welcome back to the Newcastle Natter. Good break, guys.
Very good, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
At the risk of asking another general question, which could lead into, I don't know, something like that, interest rates going up or something, whatever the most possible turgid route is to go into. Do you have any other thoughts on the game, Dave?
Nothing like particular about the Villa game, because that's quite a general question. I don't want to get like bogged down into something boring. So what I'll just say is it's really refreshing to see how well we're playing generally. Like the every part of the team is doing its job really well, from goalkeeper all the way forward. I mean, I say the goalkeeper's doing a good job. In the last three games, he's only had to make four saves, and they were all against Spurs. He's had nothing to do because everybody in front of him's doing their job really well, and that's all down to Howe and his coaches and the players.
Have you got some Howe stats?
Well, yeah. So
somebody on Twitter today said I looked like Eddie Howe. Anyway, carry on.
I saw a video of you earlier. I thought you were looking more and more like Brendan Rodgers. Take that however you want.
Well, that's the dream. It's always been a dream.
You do have a huge portrait of yourself behind you.
But we're all aiming for, isn't it?
So before Howe took over, and this isn't, I'm not having a go at the previous manager, it's just where we were. Before Howe took over last season, we were 19th for XG. We were 19th for passes per defensive action, which is essentially a measure of how much you press the opposition. And we were 19th for expected goals against. So essentially, we weren't scoring any. We weren't making chances. We were conceding lots of chances, and we weren't putting the team under any pressure. Then when he actually took over, at the end of the season, of that season, we were 16th for XG, 15th for passes per defensive action, and 15th for XGA. So again, we're not great, but there has been some improvement. Now, we're second for XG, we're fourth for passes per defensive action, and we're seventh for XG against. So we are, by orders of magnitude, we've improved. And you can see that in the results we've had. If you compare the results, if you basically do a side by side for Wolves away versus Wolves away this season, and if you use Watford, Burnley, and who else went down, the other team who went down as substitutes for the teams now, which is Fulham, Nottingham Forest, and
Bournemouth,
thank you. We're genuine. This is back of a fag packet maths, but we're about 26 goals better off and about 15 points better off. I mean, that's huge. That's an incredible change in form. And yes, I accept we spent a lot of money, but some of our best performers have been the players who were there under Ashley. Like Miguel Almiron's a perfect example. Joel Linton's a good example. Maximum, Wilson, all of these players were available to Newcastle beforehand. But the job that Eddie Howe and his coaching team done with that squad is unbelievable. He's got to be not a shoo-in for manager of the year, because you don't know what's going to happen, but he's already in the conversation, and rightly so.
I think what's been most impressive to me about that turnaround as well, if you look at sort of second half of last season, we were in top five form, but it wasn't with that kind of high XG. And we were still quite a passive team. And Howe had come in wanting to make us a more attacking team, playing higher up the pitch. But it would have been very easy to just go, well, this is working. So scrap that plan. We'll just sign better players for the gaps we've got. We won't replace Dubravka because that's working. But they still got to the end of the season. And so, no, we're going to still try and control games. We're not going to... We were being a bit lucky about performing our metrics second half of last season.
Mm-hmm.
But you could easily understand them going, this is what we're going to try and stick to. But he still tried to basically change the entire way that team plays. And this is a squad that's been told for years that it can't control games and has always struggled to break teams down.
Isn't it all sort of summed up in that sort of Brendan Rodgers-esque slogan that is apparently up around the training ground?
Live, laugh, love.
Live, laugh, love. Prosecco o'clock. No, intensity.
Welcome to the jingle.
Intensity is our identity.
Yeah.
Right. That's apparently that's our thing. And apparently and the stats back it up. And I guess that required a pre-season of fitness training.
I thought our slogan was gin dependent women. We'll keep calm and Prosecco.
All I'm doing is just trying to think of like alcohol base.
It's never Guinness on those signs, is it? It's always gin.
Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
But I think intensity, you can see that across the pressing that we're doing, but you can also see it in apparently like on the team coaches and stuff. Eddie Howe's on his laptop looking at the game that's just finished and or preparing for the next one, and you know that it feels like he's working his bollocks off. The coaches beneath him are working really hard and the players are working really hard. And it's the kind of thing where I think if we were to lose, and we've seen it, if we lose a player to injury, the overall ethos of the club is to work hard and to work in this way that I'm not as worried about if like we've been missing St. Maximum for the majority of the start of the season. We haven't really missed him. Do you know what
someone
I mean?
Like someone like Jacob Murphy now is not a he's not a top six Premier League footballer, but he is a very valuable squad player in terms of his ability to press, because he's Howe has got that out of him.
Yeah, he looks like he's got a goal coming as well, and he's probably put himself ahead of Ryan Fraser now. I think on that left hand side.
I've been looking across all the different like resources that I can find to try and see one which measures if a shot ends up on the woodwork, because I'm convinced no man has hit the woodwork more than Jacob Murphy. The ball just seems to be attracted to that.
It is uncanny.
It's unreal. Like it's genuinely. I can't. Every time he takes a shot, I expect it to hit the woodwork.
So there you go. Maybe he'll be scoring more than Almiron soon if he can just move his shots an inch.
But I think what's good about Murphy is that he knows what the plan is for the position he's coming on in. So if someone has to go off injured or if he's coming on at the end of the game, you don't think this is going to lose any pressure we've built up. It's just straight in carrying on with the game plan. And actually, we've quite often on the WhatsApp joked when Murphy comes on, but now it doesn't, we're not laughing anymore.
Well, he was before, he was sort of being used as a championship St. Maximin, right? It was like, it was just come on and please beat three people and score.
Mm.
Yeah.
But now he's got like, whatever happens, he's got a job that is very valuable, which is something I don't have. Okay, so
so we
So, should we go to social media?
I think we better had.
But let's okay, do it.
Let's open the floodgates.
Klein Thames says, our summer signings have been excellent when fit, but the two that got away were Frenchman Hugo
Ekitike
and Axel Legrand. Ekitike has struggled to find form at PSG, and Legrand now appears to be playing non-league. Do you think they regret not opting for Newcastle? Feels like a rhetorical question, really. But we must be in the next transfer window now that the new regime and the new manager have been in for a year, and considering where we are in the table, you would think that a lot of players are hoping for a move to Newcastle now, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think when you look at Ekitike, you could sort of understand turning us down, especially for PSG. You look at Bruno and even Botman, even though it's half a year later, they still took a risk on their careers to come to Newcastle. It doesn't feel like that's as risky a move now.
Did you see Richard Keys a week or two ago suggesting that he was going through that old sort of thing that, I suppose there's a little bit of truth to it, but it's become like this big, a bit of a cliche about Newcastle that like footballers don't want to move to Newcastle, or their wives don't. And he suggested that what Newcastle should do is have their training complex near London. Because you still play their games at St James's. It doesn't matter. They just fly on private jets anyway. So what does it matter? But them and their families can live near like Legoland.
Yeah. This whole thing about like footballers not wanting to move to Newcastle because it's not as metropolitan as London. I mean, London, fine, but like all they really care about right now is that there's places to go out and eat and drink and, you know, spend their money there. Golf courses, somewhere to buy a nice car and some boutique shops to buy, you know, Gucci headbands and shit. They don't really care that much about everything else. Like, they don't. And Newcastle is a lovely city. And if you were to live in the areas where the footballers live, then you'd be happy as Larry as a footballer. I mean, I live near where all the footballers live around here. And honestly, you could get the same kind of thing in like Hexham and Morpeth and out that way anyway. So
yeah, but like, I mean, the idea is that their families don't necessarily know all that, Dave. They don't know about Hexham and Morpeth.
No,
they just know that it's a lot further away from London than anywhere else in the Premier League.
Just do the Kevin Keegan approach. Just lie. Just lie to them. It's a 45-minute flight from London, Southampton, Bristol, all the rest. It's a 45-minute flight from Paris. I don't
think it's a big issue.
No.
No, it's a mad suggestion from Richard Keys, though. Yeah. It's sort of, you wonder where, do you think he's just gone, oh, got a fantastic idea for Newcastle.
Why haven't they thought about this? Just move.
Sort of starting to play the sort of like Piers Morgan of football role. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think a few people do that actually, is they sort of know that if you say like things that are going to wind up,
it's like Gabby on Bonner.
Yeah, him. If you're going to be, if you're going to say things that wind up the fans of certain clubs, that will drive a lot of internet traffic.
Yeah.
Theo Penn says, anyone else concerned about the potential impact and injuries either Shah or Botman would cause due to the lack of quality cover at centre-back? Are you worried about that, Paul?
A little, just because of how good their partnership's been. less worried with Botman because I think Dan Byrne can fill in that place very, very well. My worry is that we still... It sounds really harsh on Lascelles. Like, I'm not, don't mean it in that as harsh a way, but he doesn't seem to be near the quality of those three. And that's where we look weak. I mean, teams' fourth centre-backs aren't always particularly good, but he looks like one where you think it's a worry if he's starting a game because you can't play it high up the pitch and we don't have that level of control. And a lot of our game at the minute is about a calm back four spraying really good long balls around the pitch and cutting through other teams' midfields. And you don't get any of that with Lascelles. But then we've got Dummett, who can fill in at centre-back. I worry, but also anytime we get an injury, another player seems to just slot in who's been coached into becoming a far better player than they were last time we saw them play.
But I mean, that's also the nature of football, isn't it? Unless you're Man City, you're not going to have like four good players in every position, like or of equal standard. You know, if our best players get injured, could that make us worse? Well, yeah, but we're fourth at the moment, which is great. I don't think any of us. Here's a question: what do you think our percentage chances, Paul, of finishing in the top four?
Ooh, 20%.
Dave?
33%.
Whoa.
I was going to say 25%. 25%. But yeah, I think we have been on... It just doesn't feel likely that we'll sustain this level of form just because... I mean, Almiron, for example, cannot play that well for a whole season.
But
I don't know.
I would say that since House taken over, we have performed like top six, top four form consistently for like a season and a half. And I think that this season away from Newcastle is quite similar to the 2012 season where we finished fifth, sorry, because you've got a couple of big sides who are having, by their standards, poor seasons in Liverpool and Chelsea. You've got a raft of mid-table clubs who have started really badly, like Leicester and Wolves, and you've got the two promoted sides doing way better than anybody would expect in Fulham and Bournemouth. And those teams are taking points off the mid-table sides. They're even taking some points off the top sides. So if we're one of the few teams that are actually in form, why the fuck can't we? And we are in form. And as I said earlier, we're not overly reliant on one or two players as much as we were back in that season. We finished fifth.
We're definitely the best of the rest at the moment, right?
Yeah.
In the way that West Ham have been maybe for the last couple of years, or Leicester have been, or maybe Wolves. I mean, it's us at the moment, isn't it? And I think it probably will be at the end of the season. What am I saying here? I'm saying the big six. Is that what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs, Man U, Man City, Liverpool. Was that six teams?
Yeah.
Right. I'd be very surprised if we finished lower than seventh.
I think we'll be top six. I said seventh at the start of the season, but I think the way we're playing, I think it's where you look at lately, we're top of the Premier League form table, and that's without Saint-Maximin and Isak.
Mm.
My worry is a Wilson injury with Isak out. If we're reliant on Chris Wood, then suddenly I think we get back to drawing a lot of games.
I'd like to retract the confidence with which I just said I'd be very surprised if we finished lower than seventh. I think that was quite cocky because football. Fuck, who the fuck knows what's going to happen in football?
But I think if you look at where we are, we're 24th. it's really only Manchester and Chelsea that can catch us.
You know, with
it, on 24 points. Right. Liverpool are on 16 points, so they're already 8 points behind us. And they look absolutely gassed. I don't think it's completely unlikely that we could finish top four. I think
here's a question.
Yeah.
Is there a possible factor when you bear in mind the size of our squad and the way we're playing that we may suffer from Leeds or Liverpool style burnout?
I don't think so. Weirdly as well, the person who also doesn't seem to think that is Pep Guardiola. Did you hear him talking about Newcastle the other week in his press conference? No. He was asked about when will Newcastle be in that sort of conversation for the top four. And he was saying they're already there. Like, they're not playing midweek. They've not got Europe. That protects the size of our squad against the team. We're not.
Didn't he also say Steve Bruce was like?
No, that was Arteta.
That was awesome. Okay.
But the other thing, just before we move on from that, is the way that we approach a lot of these games, where if we are up against better opposition, we tend to kill the game a lot more, and we tend to time waste. And what that means is that we've got time to, you know, take a breath and get our energy back. The conditioning levels that these players are showing is they look fitter than anything. And when it gets to the end of the game against like Brentford, Fulham, Aston Villa, there's only one team who looked out of breath, and it wasn't us.
Mm. I think we might have said this the other week, but if we're top four when the transfer window opens, then it'll be very interesting to see what the board do, because it wouldn't be a massive surprise if they chuck a load of money at consolidating that place, because they're suddenly 2 years ahead of schedule and have a chance to get a foothold in that top four.
But you wouldn't want to mess it up, would you? You wouldn't want to sign a Sprilia. I would love to sign a Sprilia.
Yeah.
You know, there is an Sprilia.
A player who's going to upset the balance. But what you might want to sign a better backup centre back than Jamal Lascelles, for example.
Yeah, I think as well. You look at, our transfer record under these new owners, the success rate is pretty ridiculous so far. You look at Botman and Bruno together, just look like you can't understand how top four clubs or Champions League clubs weren't trying to sign them.
Mm. And I think what you've also got to look at is that the defence that has been so good this season, like Fabian Schär was already at the club, but it's like Target, Burn and Trippier, then Botman. These guys, we could pick up players like with the right attitude and the right skill sets to add something to this club without spending, you know, huge amounts on one player. Mm. And I do, like you say, Paul, I trust the recruitment process, the recruitment team, not to buy an Asprilla, although we are interested in an Asprilla.
Ooh, who's
Yasser Asprilla?
Not Anne Asprilla.
No,
a woman called Anne.
Yeah,
she's married to Tino Asprilla.
Yasser Asprilla from a young kid from Watford.
Really? I think as well, the other thing that protects us from that sort of massive flop signing is we've still got a sort of outside the Champions League level wage ceiling, so we're not going to go and sign a Tevez or a Robinho.
No.
Yeah. Our next game is against Southampton. It's on Sunday, 2 o'clock kickoff. It's on Sky. It's away. I did have the fortune of seeing Southampton play on Saturday. I didn't think they were very good. That's all I've got to say on the matter.
That's the full scouting report. Eddie and Jason will be pouring through that for tips of how to set up.
Come back into the training ground. They say, "What have you got for us?" Vegas. I said, "Don't worry about it, lads. They're shit.
They're not very good."
They're like, "You definitely went, didn't you?"
Yeah, I went. Yeah.
Just as there's a lot of pictures of Legoland on your Facebook on Saturday.
No, they're not.
They're not very good. They've got players as well who I think, if they were to be relegated, you would suddenly realise, oh, they are all actually Championship players. They've got that Watford feel to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're 17th, they're on 12 points from 13 games. They're not in a great run of form. It's not particularly terrible. They've got like, what, 5 points from the last 6 games? It's not great, but it's fine. I just think we are much better than them right now. Like, in form, we're very good.
I tell you what, though, you would really know that the most entertaining era of our lifetimes was back again if we were to end a really nice run of games by losing away at Southampton.
Yeah.
Fucking Letizia, his third appearance on this podcast.
That was very much a major feature of the Keegan era.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like we've ever had much luck Southampton away.
I've been to Southampton away once and we lost 4-0, I think.
We won last season, didn't we? That was the Bruno backheel, his first goal.
Right, yeah.
That sort of bizarre goal.
You want to give us a score, Paul?
I'm going full hubris, 3-1 win.
Dave?
I'm going semi-hubris, 2-1.
When you went seven-nil. Well, 2-1 isn't hubris to suggest that you think that we might beat the
team at 17. 2-0
then, 2-0. 2-0. It's just because he said if he was going full hubris, I thought, well, I'm less hubristic. Yeah, 2-0. Sure. 2-0.
I'm going to say 3-0. I said 3-0 for Villa. I was the most optimistic then as well. And we ended up winning 4-0. So.
Wow. And I think I trust your scouting on this one.
That's the thing.
It was more stab in the dark with Villa.
What you don't understand, guys, is that I've seen them and just don't need to worry about them.
What was their starting 11?
Well, they had a goalie. They had a goalie, and then they had a guy on the left, and he was like defending, and then another.
Did a big lad.
Yeah, and then they had the big lad up front.
Twisty, someone quite twisty on the wing.
Yeah.
The quick fella.
Yeah, the quick fella. Give us a guy with orange boots. Yeah, so basically, don't need to worry about him.
Why are you sleeping in your car, Scout? There.
Yeah, that'd be good. Be a good sitcom, wouldn't it? A scout who's sleeping in the car. Just don't worry about him.
Don't worry about him.
How long has he worked for this club? It's his 80s. Anyone else who read his scouting report?
One thing.
Bunch of part timers, you don't worry. Can I sleep in yours tonight?
One thing I just remembered, Joe Linton's out.
Oh, yeah.
Suspended, right?
Yeah.
He does like the yellow card.
Feels less of a problem because he's been starting on that left wing. And Maximin's been on the bench.
Yeah.
Well, you would think that Sir Maximin will get a start, right?
You'd assume expect so,
yeah.
It would seem like a good... It'd seem like a good fixture to give him a start in, even though it is away. And I'm sure he'd be hoping to get a start before the World Cup. So, yeah, that would be nice.
Mm. There's also a doubt about Fabian Schär. Hamstring problems. Mm. But in much the same as we were saying, what all you do is put Target on the left, put Byrne in the middle.
Alongside two left-footed centre-backs, so can it work? It's the Gerrard and Lampard of the defence community.
Don't worry about him.
Don't worry about him.
All right. We'll end it there.
I don't know why that tickled me so much.
In summary, just don't worry about it. Okay. Thank you very much, Paul Doolan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave Watson.
Thanks, Fergus.
And thank you to you, the Newcastle Massey listener. Goodbye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.